too like cussing, you are going to hell. All you preachers who like fucking, you are going to hell. Little boys that choke the chicken, you are going to hell. It's the nature of evolution, the dinosaurs went to hell. Hell, hell, hell.
And we are the Nonprofits. How's everybody doing? That was the Bastard Fairies with We're All Going to Hell. This is Matt Delahunty. Dennis is not here today, unfortunately. But we have Matt and Russell and Linnea and Beth. Say hey.
Hi.
Hey.
See? We should have done a little harmony type thing there or something.
We used to do that thing where we were like, and we are, and everybody goes,
the
Nonprofits.
Yeah. Wonder why we don't do that anymore. Must be.
Well,
just
we only did it a couple of times.
They were just lazy.
It's hard, man.
So yeah, the Nonprofits is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization promoting positive atheism and the separation of church and state. You can find out more about the ACA at the website www.atheist-community.org. And it came to my attention this week that there are people who are aware of the Nonprofits who aren't aware that we also have a public access TV show.
What?
It was weird. It's like, why don't you mention that you guys do a TV show more often?
That's crazy.
That's true.
And okay. So I said, okay, I'll make sure I mention it. So for those who aren't aware, you can go to atheist-experience.com for more information about the TV show. It's live every Sunday from 4:30 to 5:30 on Channel 16, Time Warner Grande Communications Cable, in Austin, Texas, and streamed live over the internet. If you're, I don't know what time that is where you are, but if you want to get up or stay up late or mosey around to your computer around that time, you can catch the live stream. And then the audio podcast and the video are posted so that you can watch them on all of your, I don't know, networked fancy devices and smartphones and TiVos or whatever.
And for fans of the show, I've mentioned this before, I found about 7 lost episodes of the Atheist Experience TV show, and they're all recorded now, and they'll be up on the website as soon as I find out who to get them to.
Audio only, right?
Yeah, so audio only.
These are episodes from 2000, and they're episodes that I chose to record way back in another life, so a lot of them are episodes of me.
Actually, only 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one of them's the first episode I ever appeared on, which is incredibly embarrassing, which is all the more incentive for people to listen to it.
Oh, yeah. Gotta see that. I've never seen that one.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So who
apparently
else is on
I was
them?
Telling people about this thing they should go to called the Internet.
Wow.
It was
very
website,
innovative at the time.
Every website was HTTP.
I repeated my website at least 5 times because I didn't think there was any other way for people to keep track of it.
And our new website has a flashing GIF file.
Yeah.
We can have that debate.
Some of them did.
Yeah, some of them
did. Yeah, wait, capalert.com is still exactly the same as it was in 2000.
Go check that out. That's hilarious. There was also episodes with Martin and Jeff and Don Lawrence, which he's kind of ACA history now.
I don't even know if I ever met Don.
Yeah,
he had a ranch. I went and hung out with him a couple of times.
Is there who else is on?
And
these
he
clips?
Interviewed
who
porn
else?
Stars.
Oh, awesome.
Oh wow. There was some guy I couldn't find out the name of him because he wasn't a regular host. He was like a guest.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find out who that was.
There's isn't it like Ray or somebody that would rather we didn't show any clips from when they were on?
We had one where Ray was doing introductions from off camera.
Okay.
Nah, I'm not worried about that.
Okay. Yeah. And there was,
he didn't even say his name.
There was obviously Russell. And except Russell's
now
dad.
Except now. You know.
and Russell's dad.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we can't wait to get those up and posted. So, Dennis is out for the week. And
it's a shame we miss you, Dennis.
Yes. Well, he was out 2 weeks ago, sick, and then last week we had to cancel the show. Don't you love the fact that it's a weekly show that we cancel every other week? So
I like it better than a bi-weekly show that we cancel
for months
every week.
Yeah.
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 True.
So once again, just so you know, the schedule is to attempt to do a show next week. One of the kind of little caveat drawbacks is that we do this at Mine and Beth's place. And we're in the process, of course, preparing for a wedding and looking to buy a house and all kinds of stuff. So there is a butt ton of stuff going on.
You know, I don't think that fans have heard the story of how you guys proposed.
Oh. On the spot.
On the yeah. Let's hear.
You want me to tell it?
Sure.
Okay, well, we were in here setting up for the nonprofits.
So romantic.
And we were cleaning and dealing with the bird, and Matt just told me to come over here, and so I did. And then he got this little box out and said, "Will you marry me?" And his hands were shaking, like, really hard. And, of course, I just, you know, screamed, and I cried, and I said yes. And then, like, I don't know. We called our both sets of parents, and I put it on Facebook, and then wow. Russell and Linnea walked in, like, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes after, and we had a show.
I didn't realize it was so right after. That's
yeah,
awesome.
You guys got here about
yep.
7 or 8 minutes after it actually happened, which cool. I didn't realize when I was doing this how potentially disastrous this could be, you know. She yeah, says
pretty close.
She says no, oh, and yeah. You guys show up, and all of a sudden the show is just a horrible disaster.
Chirp.
But I wasn't overly worried about that since we had kind of, you know, discussed things before.
Yeah.
And my hands were not shaking horribly. They were shaking a little bit.
I don't want to overshadow the story, but I
think it was a cool story.
It was a great story.
Overshadow it. Go ahead.
Also, our friends in Seattle at Ask an Atheist,
yep.
I was listening to their show last week, and Sam proposed to Becky live on the air, which was also
oh, wow.
quite cool.
Yeah, there was...
I think people should go listen to that episode.
There were thoughts of that. There was another alternate plan, because in addition... We're both kind of crafty, and she knits, and I crochet and make chainmail jewelry and mm-hmm. origami and whatever else I, you know.
Yeah.
So I was originally going to crochet like a table runner with Marry Me in it. And I was like, by the time I get this thing done, we'll both be like 70
yeah.
or something, you know. And then, so,
that's long. Table runners are long.
Yeah, so that just wasn't going to happen. And I didn't want to do it on Valentine's Day when everybody else was doing it. I didn't want to do it on the show as, you know, like a, you know, I get enough show time and stunt time, and so I was like, let's just do it at home when she's not remotely expecting it, which was cool. So enough about our personal livey things.
Everybody's fascinated.
We have news stuff.
News.
But first, who wants to generate some hate mail?
Oh, good.
Oh, yay.
Because I haven't generated enough hate mail this week.
Okay. I'm sorry, Zeitgeist fans. We're going to pick on you some more. I'm a little bit sorry. The thing is, Zeitgeist is, of course, one of those things. For those of you who don't know, it's a movie that where the first third of it is kind of about a topic that's interesting to atheists, which is that the claim that Christianity is all a big deliberate conspiracy that has been knowingly perpetrated on people for generations. And then there's the World Trade Center being an inside job, and then there's you don't have to pay your taxes. All of it is bullshit, and every time we say that, we get hate mail, because it's one of those topics where our fan base intersects with some stuff that we consider nonsense. And I think I was one of the first I think the first person to decide to go ahead and bring this up on the air. And people call us ignorant over this. And one of the reasons they've been calling us ignorant lately when the topic of Zeitgeist comes up is because when we call it the Zeitgeist movement, we've been referring to that as people who just watched the original movie. And there are a couple of other movies out there which apparently the same crowd or a new set of people has also found interesting. There's a movie called Zeitgeist Addendum, and there's now a movie called Zeitgeist Moving Forward. Yeah?
For the record, I, on several occasions, tried to make a distinction because it came to me in email between Zeitgeist the movie and Zeitgeist the movement, because right. those people want to try their hardest to say these are two completely separate things, even though they share a name and even though we constantly reference each other.
Yeah, it's interesting. As I've read it, even the director of the all three movies, Peter Joseph, has actually gone to some lengths to distance himself from some of the stuff that he was claiming. Not saying that they're not actually true, but saying basically, you know, these aren't the droids you're looking for. Don't pay attention to the fact that I spent an hour trying to convince you that 9/11 was an inside job, because that has nothing to do with my great new movie about how we can save humanity from itself.
It's like how creationists, you know, kind of stall and backtrack.
Intelligent design, right?
Yeah, yeah. When you ask them how old is the Earth, and they don't want to tell you how old they think the Earth is.
Exactly. That's a great analogy.
Because that'll just expose their stupid stuff, but they still believe it.
Right. And I mean, as proof that they still believe it, just this week on the blog, a guy came in defending the new Zeitgeist stuff and mentioned in passing, oh, and by the way, 9/11 was totally an inside job. So they're really not that disassociated from each other. But I finally decided that I've been taunted enough and I should look into this thing, and so here's my impression of it, and you can also read this on the blog if you're not a regular follower.
Are you going to go over the different Zeitgeist films, or like the Venus Project?
I'm
going to
focus
like
on the
it.
Venus Project.
Okay.
Okay, so the Venus Project is this thing that's kind of the brainchild of Jacques Fresco, who is some kind of, I mean, you know, originally I wanted to say he was some sort of inventor and leader, but I looked on the site, and as far as I can tell, his credentials are that basically he's been an engineer for a long time, and he calls himself a futurist. I'm not really, I wish I had looked into this more carefully, but I'm not even sure if he has any advanced degrees at all, much like Dr. Laura.
All right, keep going.
But anyway, it doesn't matter. Maybe he does. He's been promoting this idea, which is kind of a logical extension of the third part of the first movie, that all taxes are illegal. Now they're saying that all money is immoral. So they're pushing this idea of something which is called a resource-based economy, which is basically, as far as I understand it, you get rid of all forms of capital because capital is managed by evil capitalists who have all this incentive to keep stuff which is in actuality abundant. I'm kind of paraphrasing the Zeitgeist people here. So, for instance, one of the things that they say is, we could feed everybody in the world and no one would ever go hungry again if it weren't for you know, the evil capitalists holding all the food hostage. And stuff like there are all these things like planned obsolescence, where we have too much stuff and the corporations encourage that by, you know, making things go obsolete really quickly. And there's a conspiracy to build cheap stuff so that you'll have to buy more stuff, and that uses up resources faster.
Like blacksmiths, we planned their obsolescence.
Yeah. Some of that I agree with, actually. Linnea,
yeah,
do you?
Yeah.
I mean, you're into this. Tell me what your point of view is.
Well, I mean, it's like IKEA furniture. You know, IKEA furniture can be pretty cheap and flimsy, and it's cheap because it's a little flimsy, and it can fall apart kind of easily, a little more easily than you know, sturdier furniture.
And it's overpriced, right?
I guess it's overpriced.
Well,
I mean,
no, I don't know.
Oh, a little. I need to be closer. Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of off the top of my head. But with the scarcity thing, you know, we could feed everyone if it wasn't for the capitalists. That reminds me of, like, you know, the parents saying, you know, eat your peas because there's starving people in Africa. It's like,
well, yes,
well,
in fact, eating your peas will not do a damn thing for those people.
Or not eating your peas because you just can't get the peas to Africa. It doesn't matter.
Right. I mean, you know, there's a couple of different issues because I'm not an economist. I've taken some economics classes, you know, way back in college and read a lot of financial books out of general interest. And of course, you know, they're focusing on resources, but there's also labor. And part of the reason that everybody's not fed is because, you know, time is money. As you've probably heard. I mean, people actually have to make an effort to get out there and fly over to, you know, Africa or whatever and charter the plane that can carry all the food over, which isn't cheap. And so it's a non-trivial issue to get food over there. I hope that more people will get involved and do it. I mean, you know, I'm not in any way discouraging people from solving the problems of the world. But the solution that these people have come up with, the resource-based economy, is typical zeitgeist thinking, I have to say. Which is that basically, there are no complicated problems in the world. Everybody has a really simple solution that can be summed up with a catchphrase. Money is a technological invention. I mean, it's a system that people created because there are scarce resources in the world. In fact, I've read a great book, which I recommend, but not if you're feeling a little depressed, because it's a real downer of a book. It's called Collapse by Jared Diamond. And Jared Diamond goes through real actual civilizations throughout the history of civilization, which have basically died out. They used to have large thriving populations, and then in most cases they ran out of something, and then there was a huge population crash. Lots and lots of people died horribly. They starved to death, and it wasn't money's fault. Like primitive islanders over on Easter Island used to rely on lumber to build these massive construction projects because they were basically in a dick measuring contest. And they would use up more and more timber, and they're on an island, so they can't keep getting more timber, and they run out of stuff. That is an example, and then when they run out of lumber, they can't make fishing boats and all this other stuff that they rely on, and so lots of people starve. That is an example of real scarcity that exists in the world. Money is just a way of putting exchange rates on common goods and services. Yeah, Matt.
My thing about this, and I haven't spent as much time looking into this as you have, because honestly, I get extremely bored very quickly.
Well, that was my problem for a while.
Not having any expertise and not being an economist, perhaps I have no reason to comment, but I look at money as a convenience. Wasn't it a way of not having to carry around all of your resources?
Chickens.
Isn't it always going to be on some level, even with a fiat currency system, isn't it always on some level representative of resources? You have some
right.
value. Now, you can't get rid of that because you're always going to need to represent resources. It's going to turn into a contract or an electronic, you know, accounting system or something like that. But whether you call it dollars, pennies, pounds, francs, or euros, or I have 83,000 pounds of this particular, it doesn't matter. It's an accounting system. It's
right. It's like, you know, one of the popular games that we used to play a lot at game night, Bonanza. You have all these beans that are worth different amounts, and some of them are close to each other, and some of them are not. And you have to sort of come up with ways to, on the fly, kind of compare one bean to another. So you're like, you know, oh, my cocoa beans, I'd say I'll give you three of them for your much rarer whatever.
What's the game where the bottle caps are the currency? Fallout?
You mean the RPG game? I don't know.
It's a new game. It's, well, newish game. But, I mean, even in a society where, you know, modern society has already collapsed, they still come up with a money system to replace it.
I think it's like that quote that if God didn't exist, then man would have to invent him. Ha ha. If money didn't exist, which at one time it didn't, people would have to invent it, which they did.
I mean, it's like, you know, I'll give you three chickens for that. I don't have them on me, so I'll give you a piece of paper that represents my three chickens.
Exactly.
It is a natural process.
I listened to a great episode of This American Life from NPR a few weeks ago where they actually talked about the invention of money. And one of the things that they were highlighting, I mean, they like that show does, they went to different stories of things that happened around the world. And there was apparently a culture that used a giant stone wheel as currency. Now, obviously, people didn't carry around giant stone wheels with them, so eventually it got to be so that they basically had to trust each other that, you know, based on, you know, okay, I now say you own that stone wheel, but it's actually not going anywhere. And there was an incident where they were sailing with the stone wheel to another land, and the ship sank. And everybody was freaking out, like, oh, no, all this wealth's at the bottom of the ocean.
They were wheelie, wheelie sad.
Right. But everybody said, oh, well, it's okay. That wheel still exists somewhere, and so we have on paper who owns it. And basically, you've got rudimentary money right there.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that whether you've got the freaking block of stone that the paper is translating to. It's symbolic.
Yeah, the other thing is, it reminds me of Stephen, what's his name's, you know, you can't have everything, where would you put it? Kind of little right. thought thing. And so finding a shorthand way of representing this stuff is going to exist no matter what. I think what they're objecting to mm-hmm. is not so much money. It's a particular fiat money system, which they feel is a contrivance.
Well,
kind of,
and we've got the people who want us to go back to represent, you know, having only money that's based directly on silver and gold.
Yeah.
We've even got a few of those people in the ACA. But actually,
silver and gold are just another kind of fiat.
Yeah.
I mean, they have, just like any other money, they have value because we say they do.
Well, the difference being that there is a finite quantity that's accessible.
Right. But
versus
still.
A fiat money system that just kind of keeps inflating. But it still normalizes on some level. Yeah,
right.
You know, $1,000 a day is what, you know, 400 was X number of years ago.
But another thing that these zeitgeist movement, which I'm now using correctly to represent people involved with Jacques Fresco's Venus Project.
Okay.
Another thing that they seem to do frequently is throw imaginary technology at a problem. For instance, when I think of their claims that if money wasn't limiting us, we could have, you know, unlimited resource usage, the first thing that my mind jumps to is oil. Oil is something that we've come to depend on enormously in the 20th and 21st century. I mean, you know, it really reaches farther than a lot of people realize. We rely on it for travel and for, you know, for heating our cities and, you know, for transporting food around. It's everywhere. And getting rid of money isn't going to get rid of that problem. So what the Venus Project people say, and sort of hand wave it aside, is basically, oh, once people are freed from the tyranny of money, they will naturally just put all their energy into developing renewable energy resources or renewable energy sources, which, hey, I wish I could solve all problems that way.
Yeah, really?
Just say, once our system is in place, that problem will be solved for no particular reason except that we say it will. I mean, my father was for many years a fusion researcher at Los Alamos National Lab. They've been working on the problem, okay? They've been working on it for decades. But whether or not you implement your new economic system has no bearing on whether they actually get it done.
You want to get some more hate mail real quick?
Have we got some already?
No, because this reminds me of a conversation that I've had that I think ties in, and I'd like to see if you agree.
Okay.
I got an email and exchanged a few back and forths with a libertarian.
Yes.
Yikes.
Libertarians are kind of at the opposite spectrum of silliness in a way.
Well, I don't want to necessarily put them all in the same bucket, because there are a number of things with which I agree with libertarians on.
Sure.
And there's things that I agree with Republicans on and liberals and everything else. But
we all agree that we should wear clothes.
Yeah.
That's some common ground.
I agree that most people should wear clothes most of the time.
I guess we disagree on who should be the ones that are wearing clothes.
Because, you know, Beth was all excited that you could run around in Travis County topless if you wanted to. But So, anyway, one of the things that you said is something that came up during this conversation with the Libertarian, which was this kind of mentality that they're so opposed to the de facto kind of liberal slash capital mindset that his position was, I don't want to say there because I was talking to one guy, his group of libertarians has the solution, and if only we would put their system in place, it would fix everything, all of the problems, because capitalism doesn't actually solve any problems.
Do
you even realize the irony? I mean, it's like he's saying that the free market system will take care of everything. Well, the free market system didn't send anybody to the moon. It didn't cure polio, you know,
the internet
or smallpox. It didn't, you know, these types of things. And he's like, oh, now you're going to list all the good things that the system's done. I'm like, yeah, that's kind of the point.
If you just said it doesn't solve any problems, if then you said, I'd say listing the problems it solves.
And he was like,
relevant.
You just walked right into my trap. What I'm actually saying is that, you know, if our system was, you know, in place, we would actually be able to solve all these problems. And we would, you know, not be. It was just at that point, I just stopped responding because there's not much point in carrying on. But it reminds me of what the Zeitgeist Movement people are saying, that we've got this solution, and if only you'd let us implement it, it would solve everything. And yet you have no basis for saying that, because there's no way to do a test of this.
Right. I mean, when you're dealing with the social sciences, you can't really do controlled experiments, okay? So, I mean, we don't have the same standards of evidence required exactly that we would if you were testing, like, you know, a new idea about how gravity works. I mean, it's not something you can repeat. I mean, you know, you can't subject a group of people against their will to an economic system.
You are constantly shooting at a moving target in every society all the time.
But you ought to have some kind of measurement of, you know, how libertarian, you know, how whether one society is closer to what you want than another one, whether it's more libertarian, whether it's more like this resource-based economy. And what, you know, let me distinguish libertarianism, because there are a lot of very sane and reasonable libertarians from
who are my friends.
Right. And we love them. From anarcho-capitalists, which is like the extreme, there should be no government doing anything at all ever kind of thing. What you have with these outlandish claims about how things should be, with like all government abolished, or the Zeitgeist Movement saying, you know, we shouldn't have any money ever, or reaching farther back in history, communists, let's have this perfect utopian system where everybody gets from each according to his abilities and to each according to his needs. The problem with this is that not only have they not been tried, but there's no halfway point. There's no situation where a libertarian could look at this and say, okay, this country is, I mean, an anarcho-capitalist can say, this system is more like anarcho-capitalism than this one. Let's see how they compare on certain metrics. Because usually those metrics never, ever favor anarcho-capitalism. They show that, like, a country that has more government infrastructure, more public education, does better on various metrics in terms of wealth and in terms of citizens actually educated than the other ones do. So then they fall back on, well, it wasn't a perfect example of anarcho-capitalism, and therefore it's not a valid test.
Yeah. And it, one of the things that came up was, he's like, you know, our government's been waging a war on poverty, and we've made absolutely no progress in the last 40 years.
Yes, we have made progress.
Hang on. In the last 40 years.
Oh,
and
I
it
see.
Turns out that over the last 40 years, it's been up and down, and there's been some progress. For example, senior citizens, we have made very dramatic changes in the last 40 years with regard to senior citizens and poverty. But the thing is, if you go back 50 to 60 years, you see this huge drop in poverty, and that's because that's when we started taking action. And what they're failing to realize is that it may just be the case that there is a normative poverty level that we are going to be unable to overcome by any system, either system.
Right. But that doesn't mean that, like, the situation that we had during the Great Depression, where, like, what was it, over 50% of senior citizens, all senior citizens, were living in poverty, and today, where it's considerably less than that, that's an improvement.
Well, the other...
I mean, just because we haven't gotten to 0% poverty doesn't mean that you can't tell the difference.
The other aspect is that you have exactly one system that you're looking at. And when you say we've made no progress, you can't make that statement. Because without our efforts, the poverty level may well have been extreme, much, much higher. It may be that we have kept it significantly lower because of those efforts. It's like if you're, you know, if you've got your finger in the dike and people are saying you're not really doing anything, well, let me take my finger out and have you tell me that, you know?
Right.
You know, a government organization, government-sponsored organization that does a lot of good stuff like that? Planned Parenthood.
Really?
Yeah.
Planned Parenthood.
Wait, are we segueing off of Zeitgeist already?
I think so, after like 30 minutes or so.
That was an amazing rant.
Let me just throw one more thing out.
Okay.
Something that is symptomatic of the way Zeitgeist people think, because it was something somebody highlighted in the comments of the thread I posted, which I think was perfect. This guy went to the Venus Project website, like I did, and read through it, and he said, in a good example of just throwing out technology that doesn't exist as solutions to problems that are real, he said, "My favorite part of Zeitgeist Addendum was that guy's solution to drunk driving. A pendulum would detect when a driver swerves and keep the car going straight." See, because they're all about coming up with artificial intelligence administrating.
It's going to be a lot of dead puppies if we implement that system.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
He says, "And never mind that you wouldn't be able to turn the car if the road curved."
Yeah. The thing I don't understand about that is, why would you make up a technology with a pendulum when cars already have technology where you have to breathe into a slot to get the car to start? Like, why make up extra stuff?
Or cars that drive themselves. That would be a good technology to have.
Like, as long as we've got infinite energy, why not make up cars that drive themselves?
Well, sure. I think we're going to have cars that drive themselves.
Yeah,
I think we already do
eventually, but it's not going to be thanks to those guys.
And they're probably not going to be pendulum based.
No.
I'm sorry that your idea of the pinnacle of technology was trumped by the Greeks thousands of years ago. But all right, yeah. So segueing.
All right, we can move on.
As
Thank
part
you for
of
giving me my rant,
surely. As part of their stated mission to focus on jobs, specifically the job of preventing women from getting health care, House Republicans this afternoon voted 240 to 185 to bar federal funding for Planned Parenthood. This is a big win for Republican Mike Pence, the Indiana Republican, whose deficit-minded crusade against Planned Parenthood hinges not on the argument that taxpayer money shouldn't pay for abortions. The Hyde Amendment put a stop to that in the mid-70s. But on the conviction that taxpayer money should not go to organizations that provide abortion services, regardless of what else they might do. Pence's plan, which will likely stall in the Senate, the only good thing,
here's hoping,
would mean the end of federal support for an organization that each year provides more than 800,000 women with breast exams, more than 4 million Americans with testing and treatment for sexually transmitted diseases, and 2.5 million people with contraception, which, not for nothing, is the stuff that prevents unintended pregnancies and thus abortion to begin with.
It's so ridiculous, it almost leaves me speechless.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about that. Planned Parenthood, they only make 3% of their money from abortions. Abortion is a tiny, tiny part of their business.
Yeah,
without Planned Parenthood, I'd be pregnant right now.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
They provide contraception.
Which confirms that I've been getting laid, and that's a good thing. No, it's
I'm sure everybody was on pins and needles waiting to do
that. All right, so it wasn't funny at all. I failed miserably. But Planned Parenthood's been huge because she moved to Texas after graduating, had a period of time before getting a job and a period of time before her regular health care kicked in. And I couldn't add her to my health care coverage. And that meant Planned Parenthood is the option for getting birth control.
Yeah, they provide a great service. And it's really, I would be really sad if it ended up just being these crisis pregnancy centers, because those are just the biggest scams. And I feel like that's what they want, is just to have these fake centers where they just push people into the option that's cheaper for them of not having to provide any, you know.
But it's not cheaper.
It's not.
If these women are getting pregnant and going to be on Medicaid, it is so much cheaper. You save so much money.
But see, if they don't have to pay for contraception, then they don't care. See, it's a two-pronged attack. First of all, they say, oh, well, we get rid of the birth control. And then they say, oh, well, hey, Medicaid is taking all this money that... And then they get rid of that.
And then we have children starving in the streets,
just
which
another
people don't
tentacle
stand
of Obamacare.
For.
And then they get rid of homeless shelters because they're spending too much money feeding all these extra kids. See?
Yeah, but kids starving in the streets is not something that the American public is going to stand for.
That's kind of the path that it would go down, though.
Well, I mentioned collapse earlier, and one of the things that...
Are you saying birth control is a scarce resource?
No, but I am saying that one of the hallmarks of a society in its death throes is that basically you have a segment of the population which is not only controlling most of the scarce resources, but also is able to gate themselves off and hide from the problems of the rest of society.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's
and not
exactly
look at it.
Oh, yeah, the rich people, they'll always be able to get birth control and abortions.
Oh, sure, no problem.
Just fly over to Europe.
So I've been planning for a while, and I keep kind of putting it off. But, I'll say that I'm in no danger of being pregnant right now. But I intend to go to one of these crisis pregnancy centers and actually pretend like I am worried that I'm pregnant and see how I get treated and what kinds of things they try to push.
So I'll let's do an undercover operation.
Heck yeah. Totally. So look forward to that. But yeah, I mean, support Planned Parenthood, NARAL, NARAL, pro-choice. I'm betting the ACLU is supporting this too. So help them out however you can. Check them out, because the ACLU definitely has letters that you can write to representatives. And that's the way to get legit stuff done.
There's kind of a grand irony here from my perspective, and you guys brought it up, and that's this idea of saving money by spending money on the front end with preventative measures.
Mm-hmm.
By funding things like Planned Parenthood that not only provide abortion and contraception, but counseling and
education,
vital services and things like that. You change the structure of the society such that you're not paying a huge load on the back end, or the front end, which direction you're looking at. Anyway, the point being that the military at least understands this. You know, when I was in the Navy, we had this incredibly great, almost excessive preventive maintenance system. And it kind of ingrained in me this idea of look at what you can do ahead of time. And it's one of the things that we've, you know, kind of taken to doing in the show when we're having discussions, and we're all such huge proponents of education because you can fix so many problems before they ever occur with education.
It's just such a simple idea. And
it's
if only
dumb.
Everyone would come together under this idea, it would solve so many problems.
It's so simple, it's dumb. And yet the thing that I find ironic about it is it's not just, you know, Republicans or Democrats or Congress or the government or anybody else who's not getting this. It's happening in the business world too. I work in software. And one thing that not one of my employers has completely and properly understood is that if you spend your money early on testing and quality assurance, you not only save money fixing things late, but you make money because you're producing a better product.
Yeah, I mean, that is like what half my classes in grad school were all about.
I know.
It's basically, you know, plan out the way your system is going to work and then make it.
Yeah, and it drives me crazy because they get in this idea, they get in this little crunch thing, and they're like, oh, we can't spend this money here, without ever bothering to calculate how much that's going to cost them later.
Yep.
Spend the money, you cheap bastards, or you're going to go bankrupt like everybody else.
Yeah, so support Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's ridiculous that this is even still an issue we have to put up with.
Yes, of course, as bad off as we'll all be if Planned Parenthood goes under, at least we can mostly be thankful that we're not living in South Dakota, where a law under consideration would expand the definition of justifiable homicide to include killings that are intended to prevent harm to a fetus. A move that could make it legal to kill doctors who perform abortions. It's already been going on for a while, in as an illegal activity. They just want to formalize that, yes, we really think this is okay now. It is now South Dakotans' hope going to be okay and perfectly within the limits of the law for some crazy person to go around shooting abortion doctors. The Republican-backed legislation, House Bill 1171, has passed out of committee in a 9-3 party-line vote and is expected to face a floor vote soon in the state's GOP-dominated House of Representatives soon. The bill, sponsored by State Representative Phil Jensen, a committed foe of abortion rights, alters the state's legal definition of justifiable homicide by adding language stating that homicide is permissible if committed by a person while resisting an attempt to harm that person's unborn child or the unborn child of the person's spouse, partner, parent, or child.
Well, you know, the biblical punishment of that is only that you have to pay a couple of shekels.
Yeah, they're getting very extra biblical on this one.
Yeah, that's a little above and over.
Don't these people believe in Leviticus?
I realize that this particular piece of legislation is going to be most likely and hopefully amended a bit before it has a hope of passing. And I would also like to think that the first time somebody attempts to use this as a defense for murdering an abortion doctor, this law will be chucked, but that's too late.
Shoot straight up to the Supreme Court, but yeah.
That's too late.
Well, you know, the real aim of this, I mean, they're aiming pretty ridiculously high, but if it falls short of that, they'll still win, because what they're trying to do is push for what's that word? When you make something more human?
Humanize, I guess.
I thought there was a different word. Personify. They're working to personify the fetus to make it more visible as a person. They're trying to do a mean shift. Mm-hmm. And even if this law, you know, is kind of amended and tweaked so that it's kind of halfway, it's still going to be an advance for them. And that's the thing that really drives me crazy.
Yeah, it's like a personhood law.
Yes,
I
yeah.
mean,
exactly.
All these laws that have extra penalties for attacking or killing a pregnant woman, they're all like that. They all give personhood or value to the fetus that you're already going to jail. It's already illegal to kill the woman. It's already illegal to hurt the woman. Those laws do nothing else.
Well, and they have another effect, which is also desirable to that group, which is, Dr. Tiller was shot 2 years ago in Wichita, Kansas. He was the only abortion provider in that area. Obviously, no one has been eager to step up and, to step up and start being the replacement abortion provider.
Do we know that for sure?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, actually, there's been a woman who has been trying to step up. I mean, so 2 years have passed, and she's finally trying to step into the role. She went on Rachel Maddow last week and talked about this, and the next day they marched on her house, like, you know, tracked down where she lived and stood outside.
There are
scaring the crap
no
out of
South
her.
Dakotan abortion providers. There are only
I believe it.
there are only doctors flown in from Minnesota and other places.
Yeah.
Wow.
And when you think about it, that means that while the people who actually commit the murders may be tried and convicted, they still win. Because we look the other way when there are terrorists in our country. And I'm not exaggerating when I use the word terrorists.
Too true.
I mean, that is like textbook definition of terrorism, which is threatening to kill or actually killing somebody who is representative of a group you want to suppress. That's terrorism.
So South Dakota listeners, write in to your House representatives and give them the what for.
I think the governor did say he would veto it.
Well, that's good. Thank the governor preemptively for vetoing it.
Yay.
Because it's always nice when they get positive stuff, too. More depressing stuff? How about that?
That's all we got this week.
No, I have another
mildly
depressing. Oh, that's pretty depressing.
I don't have the news articles because my computer is... Oh, I do. Oh, Senate okays anti-gay marriage bill in Wyoming. Sorry, I'm trying to scroll here. Wyoming Senate narrowly voted Friday to stop recognition of same-sex marriages and civil unions from outside the state. So even if you get married somewhere else, they're not going to recognize it in Senate. And they voted 16-14 after tagging on a last-second amendment guaranteeing out-of-state couples in civil unions access to Wyoming courts. Now it heads back to the House to approve the changes. They passed the legislation last month, the House did, but they still have to approve the changes. And, it defines a marriage contract as between a male and female person. But also, So this ridiculous fight has been going on for so long, and it's just... keeps popping up in every different state.
I'll give him props for being proactive. There are people who are definitely committed to this cause, and they're taking actions, and they realize that other states are going to start allowing marriages, and so they preemptively run in and say, hey, if your other state permits it, we're not going to recognize it, despite the fact that we recognize marriages by default. Now, this thing could all crumble when we get to the national level. And I think the only reason I want to point out that I'm willing to give them props for being proactive is that there are other people who I don't think are being proactive enough.
Yeah.
Now, there are plenty of people out there that are, you know, pushing this issue and trying to do everything they can to push for a real, sensible, fair measure of equality for everyone. To me, I wish I lived 20 years from now when I hopefully would see that this stuff has gone away. And it may just be that this is something that takes time or whatever, but it's frustrating to actually be making progress and then have a handful of backward-ass yokels in some state get together and kind of undercut all, you know, whatever progress is being made. And it may just be the case that that we just say, okay, you know, Wyoming. You guys are kind of out there on your own, and we'll keep the gays away from you because they don't want to hang out with your dumbass anyway.
Well, it's not fair, though, for the kids who have to grow up in that.
Yes.
Because they don't have any choice.
Yeah. And also, they won't be protected by the magical gay shield that protected the French Quarter during Katrina.
True story.
And parts of Australia.
Yeah. The good news, though, is that Facebook is eminently more reasonable.
Yay, Facebook.
Than Wyoming and anybody else. They've expanded their relationship tags from, you know, married, single, it's complicated, to include open relationship, domestic partner, a couple other things. Civil union. Yeah, a couple other things. So, you know.
So good for Facebook. I mean, they do a lot of things that are kind of sketchy, but... But when someone does something that's positive, you know, that's when you should say, you did a good thing there, and we appreciate it. So thank you, Facebook, for including all those different things. You know, wrestling, we should change our status to domestic partnership.
Should
or
we?
Civil union as a show of support.
Living in sin's not good enough?
I wish that status was up there.
Me too, yeah.
That would be our status
today.
Add that
one, Facebook. I changed to that.
That's it. Start a Facebook group. It'll probably be done before the show's over to see how many people you can get to support a living in sin status.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Checking up.
I'm going to look at
I like living in sins
right
better.
So several women are suing former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld and current Secretary of Defense Robert Gates because of the military's repeated failure to take action in rape cases. Which created a culture where violence against women was tolerated, violating the plaintiff's constitutional rights. There's a particular story of Sergeant Avrila, who was deployed in Afghanistan in 2006, who was sexually harassed by her supervisor and was eventually raped by another, I think it's another service member. And in February of 2009, she reported for 4 weeks of active duty training. During this training, she saw her rapist in the shop at on Fort Leonard Wood. Upon seeing her rapist, she went into shock. She immediately sought the assistance of the military chaplain.
First mistake.
Guess what he said?
I don't want to.
It
must have been God's will for her to be raped and recommended that she attend church more frequently.
What is the point of having chaplains if they're supposed to be there to provide spiritual support, but that doesn't sound very supportive at all.
That's when you just want to have Jeff D. pop down from a cable in the ceiling and yell, "What is wrong with you?" and then just pop back up.
Yeah, I would support that. I mean, I don't know, this notion that stuff happens for a reason. I just got reminded of I have this movie called Pamela's Prayer about a girl who waits till marriage to kiss a guy. It's awesome. You should check it out. You could buy it for $5 because they're selling it super cheap. But anyway, she has this friend.
Or better yet, torrent it for free and don't give them any money.
I couldn't find a torrent of it, but we can't encourage illegal stuff, I don't think. So she has this friend that likes to kiss boys because it's so much fun. And then she gets raped. The friend gets raped. Spoiler. And they comfort her by saying, you know, go and say no more and pray for that guy who did it. And that's it. That's the kind of mentality that Christians have when it comes to rape. It's your fault. Just kind of forgive it. Forget it. Not a problem.
It's all part of God's plan.
I want to make up a hilarious twist ending for that, but anything I can think of is incredibly insensitive. So pass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Speaking of Facebook, as we were two stories ago, I'm not sure it's been brought to everybody's attention that we have an official Atheist Experience Facebook group page.
Yay!
Fan page. Everybody should go there and like it, because you know you do like it. And if you haven't been hanging out on the Atheist Experience fan page for this last week, you've been missing out, guys. I promised some people that I'd bring up this story. This Christian was obsessively posting, like, apologetics and trash-talking and calling everybody names. And people were kind of asking him, so, you know, what's your deal? What do you believe? And then he posted a bunch of stuff about having seen demons. And everybody, you know, he said, well, but you wouldn't be interested in that story. And of course, our fans piled on saying, oh, yes, we would. So there followed some of the most fascinating 6 hours that I have ever spent online, where basically this guy was posting from his smartphone, apparently, although the smartphone wasn't doing much to help his grammar, so it couldn't have been that smart. I just have to get that dig in. But the story apparently was that he was a college football player and knows another moderately famous college football player. I looked him up. He's a real guy. And the two of them and the other guy's cousin somehow got a wrong number in the middle of the night, and it was this really hot girl telling them to come out to a party. So they went out there, and they walked past a pool where people, like, you know, this is 3 a.m, and people are splashing around in the pool and, according to this guy, pretending to have fun, but they were really being tortured. And then God's voice speaks in his head, and he yells at the lady, "Show me your eye!" And she turns around, and her eyes all bloodshot, and her face is all gross. And then she, like, jumps over the fence like a Jedi. And then when he was done with this story, which, as I said, took like 6 hours to post in its entirety because he was posting massive amounts of detail, everybody was like, okay, first of all, what evidence do you have that this is true? Which I would hope everybody would ask. And second of all, what was the point of what the demon did? What was she attempting to accomplish? Because according to your story, she called you up and scared you with her scary face and walked you past this place that, you know, she failed to really try to make any effort to capture you or anything. And then you went away. That was the whole story, apparently.
Cool story, bro. I mean, that's really all I have to say to
it. It was freaking crazy, and it's the kind of person that we wish we would get calling the show more. So sign up for the Atheist Experience fan page.
We can't promise any cool stories like that.
No, I think that is, we're never going to top that one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's been a while since we've got calls that talked about stuff. I mean, you remember Three Eyes used to call in with
Three
the...
Eyes.
You know,
yeah, actually, I couldn't stand talking to him.
Yeah, but it was annoying. But I'm actually glad that we don't get the extremely wacky calls, because it's much harder to be...
To present a positive face?
Yeah. I mean, when something is so ridiculous, I mean, that they might as well just be babbling inanely. And you can't really... I don't know. It's a pain. But, you know,
you're never sure that it's not somebody just putting you on and he's going to yell something about punching you in the face and hang up.
Yeah. I'm going to punch you in the face
never,
for Jesus.
Matt hasn't gotten punched in the face so far as I know.
Yeah.
I guess that guy failed to follow up.
Jesus is disappointed.
Let's not call him out. I'd rather not get punched in the face just so he can make a point.
Okay, that's true.
So,
Jesus forgives you for not punching Matt.
Well, the guys who wanted to punch me in the face or whatever, they share a particular mindset, which is a complete fear of atheist, the atheist label, and it's a bogeyman that they've invented out of whole cloth. They haven't invented themselves, but other people have invented. And a good example of this that came out in the last week or so is Mr. Achy Breaky Heart himself, Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh.
Also father of Miley Cyrus,
yes.
Or Hannah Montana.
You know. So he was talking about their journey out to Hollywood, where he could attempt to be remotely relevant again through his child. Somewhere along this journey, he says, both mine and Miley's faith has been shaken. That saddens me the most.
Oh.
When they first came to Hollywood for Hannah Montana, the two of them would drive down the freeway together to the studio each morning, and every day Miley would point out the sign that said, "Adopt a Highway, Atheists United." Just before moving out to Los Angeles, the whole family had been baptized together by their pastor at the People's Church in Franklin, Tennessee. It was Tish's idea, he remembered. She said, "We're going to be under attack, and we have to be strong in our faith, and we're all going to be baptized." And there, driving to work each day in the city of Los Angeles, was this sign. A physical sign. It could have easily said, "You will now be attacked by Satan. Entering this industry, you are now on the highway to darkness." And he was asked, "Do you really see it in such clearly spiritual terms that your family was under attack by Satan?" I think we are right now, no doubt. There's no doubt about it. And why is that happening? It's the way it is. There's always been a battle between good and evil, always will be. You think this is a chance to make family entertainment, bring families together, and look what it's turned into.
I want any atheist group in Nashville to adopt a highway, please. You know, because I don't really expect Billy Ray Cyrus to know any better, but we should be getting the word out there that atheists exist, you know, so that all these country people don't have to go to L.A. to see that.
And the atheist community of Austin has two streets that we've adopted. They're not highways, but it's two areas of town. And we do cleanups. Joe Zemecki is currently in charge of those cleanups. And Hemet made the best post about this whole thing, which was to post a picture of the actual sign with the atheists out there in their safety vest, picking up the trash and putting it into bags as like a demonstration of pure evil. Mm-hmm. You know, this is evil. They're cleaning up the street. So it's an example of how religion creates this, you know, this kind of fictional image of what an atheist is and who they are and what all this represents, and it's, you know, like I mentioned before, they give you a disease and then offer you the cure. They give you this, you need to live forever, and we've got the cure for that, and you're going to be under attack for Satan, and we've got the cure for that. So they're constantly creating these fictitious conflicts so that they can provide the resolution for them. And it's so bad, and you know, as I pointed out on the show on the 13th, this is such a divisive thing that somebody can't even drive by a sign and see it for what it actually is. This is a group of people who want to make people aware that not only do they exist, but they are actively contributing to the community and the betterment of society, even in a small way, by cleaning up along the highway. And Billy Ray's religious indoctrination prevents him from seeing it from what it actually is.
The scary monsters in my head are telling them to do that.
And, you know, I mean, the ACA does a ton of stuff. We've got two streets we clean up. We've got blood drives. A lot of us have supported Joe Zemecki's efforts with American Atheists and Atheists Helping the Homeless, where they're giving out food to homeless people. There's a lot of this stuff going on, and despite all efforts, you still have these poor people, and I don't think Billy Ray Cyrus was in any way attempting to be hateful or bigoted or anything else. I think he's just an ignorant, indoctrinated individual who's a victim as much as anybody else is.
You know, I've driven on the highway that the ACA owns, and it's really very nice. I mean, the Hellmouth barely tarnishes the landscape at all.
I know. You know, we have to go out there to clean up the blood, but
from all the baby rituals.
So since we have this kind of couples episode again today.
Oh yeah.
I'm torn on this, and I may come down it as a sexist buffoon, but I want to actually talk about this as kind of like the closing thing since we're over the hour.
Oh, I've got one other thing.
Well, then knock it out.
Okay. This is good news.
So, yeah.
If people on the internet, savvy people, have heard of the group Anonymous, Anonymous is going to be targeting the Westboro Baptist Church next. Vigilante hacktivist, quote-unquote, group Anonymous has a new target, the WBC. In an open letter, they promise vicious retaliation against the organization if they do not cease and desist their protest activities. They'll target the public websites, propaganda, and doctrine that you promote, and they will be eradicated. Damage will be irreversible. They're kind of like, you know, an internet mob.
This isn't good news. I cannot remotely support what they're doing.
I don't know if I agree.
Good.
I think that Fred Phelps' stock in trade is harassing people and being obnoxious to them, and that's all that Anonymous is doing.
No, it's not.
Okay. Yeah, they're saying...
What he's doing is within his legal rights as a citizen to speak out and exercise his free speech right. And what they're doing is violating the law, hacking and destroying people's websites.
Is illegal, yeah.
And they're out to actively, they are actively trying to prevent them from exercising their First Amendment rights. And that's sheer thuggery. And it's one of the reasons that I cannot remotely support Anonymous.
Oh. What's your stance on Batman?
Wow.
Yeah? I think if Batman was real, he would not be so morally unambiguous.
I think anybody
who really tried to be Batman should probably be stopped.
I think the first Batman movie was slightly underrated.
I didn't like
Clooney as Batman. I liked the kind of Dark Knight stuff. I don't know what's the kind
of... I just meant the concept of doing these things that are kind of illegal to catch the bad guy.
Yeah. Except that...
Because that's what Batman does.
And I'm not always opposed to it. I'm opposed to, you know, let's violate laws that are unjust. And, you know, if we can't change them other ways, that type of thing. But what Anonymous is doing isn't necessarily going after the bad guys. I mean...
Well, they are for now, but we can never be sure in the future who they'll go after.
Batman's going after criminals. And Anonymous are going after people who are exercising
pricks.
Their rights. Yeah.
They're going after pricks.
People who are just, we don't like you. And to me, that is more analogous to...
For
just
good reason.
Thugger.
I don't want to lose sight in the discussion that they are very, very, very unlikable.
Yes.
And deliberately so.
Yes. And by the way, I got an email from Nate Phelps this week. And there's a really good chance that Nate will be on a future episode of Nonprofits.
Nate is Fred's atheist son, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would love to be able to be supportive of Anonymous. They've crossed a line. They're using tactics specifically to go after people who we all can't stand, but who are within their rights. And if I support that kind of thing with them going after those people for exercising those rights, what if Anonymous or some other group decides that they're not that happy with atheists exercising their rights?
Okay, I'm looking at Anonymous's Wikipedia page, and now I really don't like them either.
Yeah.
The last thing that they did is when MasterCard and Visa were making it so that you couldn't use their cards to donate to
WikiLeaks.
They hacked them so that to say, you know, you need to be providing the service to everyone,
which is also kind of borderline behavior. But this, okay, on March 28, 2008, Wired News reported that internet griefers, a slang term for people whose only interests are harassing others, assaulted an epilepsy support forum run by the Epilepsy Foundation of America. JavaScript code and flashing computer animations were posted with the intention of triggering migraine headaches and seizures. They don't have a noble cause. I think they're just in it for the lulls.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, there are things that they've done and things that they've stood for that I would have really loved to support, but the particular tactics, and I think they just end up crossing the line. And as much as I'd like to say, you know, go guys, you know, fight for justice, really, this is an example of somebody trying to circumvent a prick by being a bigger prick, and in this case, breaking the law to do it.
I still think Batman's cool, though, so...
Well, yeah.
Well, it's kind of like
I mean, if
asking...
Anonymous was going after rapists that had got away, and, you know, I might be a little more kind of...
Well, I mean...
It's kind of like asking if you support Jack Bauer from 24, right? I mean, Jack Bauer inhabits a universe where everything he does winds up being right.
Yeah.
But if there were a real Jack Bauer going around beating the shit out of people based on suspicion and torturing them...
Yeah,
and you know, and using methods that are generally, you know, behind the law, I think we'd have an obligation to put him away and say, "Stop fucking doing that."
Yeah,
I guess that's true.
You mean like the government? I'm sorry, I don't actually believe that. It was more of a joke thing. So,
right,
this last story.
Last story.
Des Moines, Iowa. After a standout season in which he went 35-4, Joel Northrup had every reason to dream of winning an Iowa wrestling championship this year, but he gave it all up before his first state tournament match Thursday. Northrup, a homeschooled sophomore who competes for Linmar High School, said his religious beliefs wouldn't allow him to wrestle Cassie Herkelman, a freshman from Cedar Falls, who is one of the first two girls to qualify for the tournament in its 85-year history. Northrup issued a statement through his high school expressing his tremendous respect for what Herkelman and Ottumwa sophomore Megan Black achieved this season, but said he didn't feel he had a choice. Wrestling is a combat sport, and it can get violent at times. As a matter of conscience and faith, I do not believe that it is appropriate for a boy to engage a girl in this manner. It's unfortunate that I've been placed in a situation not seen in most other high school sports in Iowa. His decision to default put Herkelman in the quarterfinals in the 112-pound weight class, and it put her name in the record book as the first girl to win an Iowa State tournament match. But it deprived her of the chance to show the skills that earned her the 20-13 pre-tournament record. Because he defaulted and didn't forfeit, he was allowed to complete in the consolation rounds, and he won his first match later Thursday by majority decision. He was spared any chance of meeting up with Black, who also wrestles at 112 and was 25-13. Northrup and Herkelman would be matched up again if both were able to make the finals in the consolation bracket. If that happens, Northrup would likely make the same decision, said his father, a minister in the Believers in Grace Fellowship. What's everybody's take?
It's its own punishment. If he's forfeiting matches that don't have opponents that he likes, then, he's going to lose a lot. And I don't have a problem with him making that moral decision for himself, or what he thinks is a moral decision. And it doesn't even matter whether it's based on faith or not. If he doesn't feel like he can wrestle her, then forfeit. Of course, sure, he's sexist. I mean, that's why you brought it up. But it's a person's individual right to be sexist. Just like it's Fred Phelps' right to be an asshole. Next.
I can't disagree with Russell.
People should be treated on what things they do and how they want to be treated. And if there is a person, I don't care if it's a boy or a girl, who has entered into a sporting event, who wants to compete, then, you know, as long as both people want to compete, then, you know, it doesn't matter. So I feel like that was a really odd decision to have made. Because
if I were organizing these tournaments, I would make damn sure that this guy goes up against girls for in every future tournament he competes in.
Oh, now see, that would be unethical as well.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fixing the things. But, I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of a weird backwards thing that he wouldn't want to compete with a girl just because it's a girl. And I don't know.
Well, he said it's because of religion. Stuff I've read on it. Well, first of all, he's wrestling with a girl. That's obviously they have a sexual connotation to that.
And it's not with a guy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Thou shalt not lie with a man as one.
Yeah, really.
And second of all, I think there were some quotes in another story I read about this where he was like, well, you know, women need to be protected and, you know, I can't be violent against a woman. Well, okay, if it's within the rules of a sporting event and they're in the same weight class, that's not violence against a woman in the same sense domestic violence is. So, I mean, he's just sexist, and he's getting penalized for it, and there you go.
And I would pay good money to see a girl beat him up.
Well,
in wrestling.
I think the penalty is, as Russell pointed out, you know, self-contained and automatic. And certainly he's within his rights. And, yes, he's being sexist. And I'm still not sure what I think about it overall. Setting aside, I don't care what his reasons are. I mean, his reasons, I think, are kind of stupid. But I think there may be valid reasons for objecting to this. There are reasons why we tend to separate out men's and women's sports because there are physical differences between them.
Well, how old is he? Because if it's pre-puberty, then
he's a sophomore,
no physical.
Yeah. Okay. It's a high school thing. But the other thing is, clearly she met the qualifications and has been capable.
Yeah.
And has sustained a winning record that got her to the state tournament.
Well, that's what the weight classes are for, yeah. To make sure that there aren't those physical differences.
Right. And so in wrestling, I think, is like, you know, one of the ones where this would be kind of okay. The problem is that a lot of us, and I will include myself here, were raised with this idea that women are special and need to be protected and sheltered and handled fragilely. And, you know, you can... this wasn't a religious thing that I was raised on. This was mm-hmm. with this was just a kind of a cultural
Southern thing.
No, I was raised in Missouri. It was just a cult. Granted, I'm older than the rest of you, but it was kind of just a cultural thing. You just were, you know, you didn't punch girls, you punched boys. Now I'm a fan of let's not punch any fucking buddy, but you know, you roughhoused with your male friends and you didn't roughhouse with your female friends. And I realize that a great majority of that is just nonsensical sexism. And in this case, where she's obviously qualified and she's willing, and you know, it's not like somebody, hopefully nobody forced her to be a wrestler. As you pointed out, Linnea, they've got the weight class limits. I don't think that this is anything that anybody could reasonably come up with an objection to. And so I have to think that his objection is unreasonable. I'm just concerned that when we look at this, people are going to look at this and say, some of them are, it's going to be so polarizing. There are going to be people who say, oh, he's just sexist. And, you know, this is all, as we've discussed, mm-hmm. you know, they have weight classes, et cetera. And there are going to be other people on the other side of it that just absolutely think it's asinine that they're allowing girls to wrestle with boys for all kinds of reasons. You know, the sexual overtone things that, you know, Beth had mentioned.
Sure, there are people who think it's asinine that the atheists get to adopt a highway.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Times are changing.
And welcome to the new world. And, of course, then there's a bunch of guys who immediately were posting, I want to wrestle girls, you know, which doesn't help.
I think those guys should be prevented at all costs.
Yes, it doesn't help. I think they're going to automatically be prevented. It's the punishment's inherent in their attitude. But, it, you know, that obviously doesn't help anything. The question is, though, for me, as we start we've been doing this for a while, as we continue to break down these boundaries and establish, you know, more kind of equality and fair representation and the opportunity for people to participate in events that they want to participate in, mm-hmm. irrespective of their, you know, junk downstairs. I said that because of you, but
I don't think it's junk.
Yeah, she doesn't either. I was using it as a phrase, and it came up. Why would you call it junk? But I wonder, you know, what we talk about this all the time, you know, in different contexts with regard to gay rights and everything else.
Okay.
I really wonder what kind of time frames we're looking at, because and I don't want to dig into this subject. We'll save it for another time. The gender disparity in, for example, atheist groups or geek groups or anything along those lines has been an issue that's been discussed a lot. And there may not be any real solutions. But one of the things that I said was that I would like to be in a position where I don't care at all, and it never becomes a consideration of mine what gender a person is when I'm inviting somebody to speak at a lecture or anything, right down to forming a wrestling team.
Making out with someone? he halts there.
Yeah, now we're talking about a personal preference rather than, you know, what turns an individual on versus.
Yeah. Back to the topic.
Back to the society aspect.
Society.
And so I'm actually wondering, because we're making progress, what kind of timeline we're looking at for these changes. You know, before I guesstimated, you know, 20 years in the future, this gay rights stuff would at least be legally resolved. If not, I mean, it's still going to linger in culture probably. For many, many, many years, if not forever. But on things like this, is there a reasonable timeline? I mean, are we looking at, do we even want to hazard a guess at when stories like this become non-existent?
Well, I don't know if timelines can are really useful or can ever be guessed at. But I mean, the things you can do there are just kind of looking into it on how to treat people. Just treat people as an individual, not as a representative of some kind of group. You know, respond to them on what they want to do. Just treat people like people.
Yeah.
And then the more people do that, the faster it'll go. So I think that focusing on the positive ways that we can promote it is a little more important than how soon it'll happen by itself.
Yeah, we watched one of those 2020 specials where they've got the hidden camera and they're watching people interact, and there's a guy who has his son at a toy store and his son's wanting dolls.
Oh.
And, you know, this big discussion takes place with a bunch of other customers, and I was overjoyed that so mm-hmm. many of them, particularly women, were just, get him the damn doll.
Yeah.
What do you care if he wants to play with a Barbie rather than a Ferrari thing? I mean, what if he turns out, you know, what if it makes him gay?
What
if it makes him gay?
Yeah.
I mean, he either is or he isn't, and he's either going to be or not. I mean, yeah. Do you have some evidence that playing with a doll versus playing, you know, I think Ferraris are kind of sexy, and...
you like cars?
I mean, no. You know.
So, well, I have a kind of a good short personal story in that I went into the bookstore a while ago, and I was in the children's section, because, you know, Russell is a kid, and...
Did you say has or is?
Has a kid.
Oh, okay. I thought he said is. No. I was like, yeah.
No, he has a kid.
Go on.
And I was really proud because there are these shelves where all the books are just kind of stacked in, you know, skinny ways, pointing out. And then there are other shelves where stuff is more presented, where the books are the flat face forward so that you can see the whole cover. And they had this row that was just like the progressive, awesome row. They had this book called My Princess Boy, which is this mom wrote this book about his little kid who wants to dress up in pink frilly stuff, and it was cute. And then they had And Tango Makes Three, which is the one about the two gay penguins who raise an egg. And there were some other books in there, too, and I was just, like, really proud that I could go to this bookstore, and those were the ones that they were promoting, so...
Were you at Book People?
No, I was at just, like, a Borders or a Barnes & Noble or something just generic.
Yeah, I bet that's not happening outside of big cities like Austin, in the Barnes & Noble.
Well, it would have happened in California, like, all the time.
Yeah. And the other thing that we saw, which we were both kind of really encouraged by, is we end up watching a lot of TLC, Discovery, HGTV, things like that. In between cooking shows, we've also, because we're looking at a house, we've been watching, you know, home buyer shows. And it was like every day there's a gay couple out there going out to buy their first home. There's like three or four or five episodes that we watched. And I was just like, look at this. When we watched 10 episodes, and half of them are a gay couple going out to get their first home. And I was like, oh, yes, everything's finally changing. You know, this is something you wouldn't have seen. And it's incredibly encouraging. And so no matter what Wyoming does or other backwards-ass places like this,
I wish the laws would catch up to the entertainment.
Yeah, I encourage optimism. And one of, probably, you know, people have asked before about, you know, coming out. And one of the suggestions that, you know, as an atheist, one of the suggestions that I've offered is don't make a big deal out of it. Just be yourself, be natural, answer questions honestly. And over the course of time,
they'll find out.
And then you can be like, well, I haven't been misrepresenting myself. I don't know why this is a big deal. Didn't you know? And I think the same thing might be useful in some context with regard to equal rights, whether we're talking about gender orientation, anything like that, where you just act like you already have that right and that privilege and that this is de facto normal. And people tend to kind of glom onto that. And so in that news, I will pronounce that, you know, as far as I know, Christianity is pretty much dead. And
it just doesn't know yet.
And the majority of people are clearly rational atheists. Just, you know, most of them aren't talking about it. And so we've won.
Yay.
So congratulations to all the winners for tuning in. And
you're all winners just for listening to the nonprofits.
Oh. And don't forget about the Atheist Experience tomorrow and the Atheist Experience Facebook page and our websites and other stuff and all them goodies. And we'll try to be back next week and hopefully have Dennis here. And I'll try to make him do a really cool introduction to make up for it. But we'll leave you with the Bastard Fairies again. We're all going to hell.
All you Mormons who like cussing, you are going to hell. All you preachers who like fucking, you are going to hell. Little boys that choke the chicken, you are going to hell. It's the nature of evolution. The dinosaurs went to hell. You are going to hell. Magic Jesus apparitions send you to hell. Buddhist monks without God, you are going to hell. Those of you dissecting frogs, you are going to hell. Hell, 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 it's a wonderful place. It's a place of fire and brimstone.